Let's talk clean homes, because you know that I've found a brand that I'm obsessed with for non-toxic cleaning, Truly Free. And right now they're offering an incredible deal. You can grab their best-selling bundle for just $39. It includes all of my everyday go-tos, which is laundry wash, whitening OxyBoost powder, dish soap, dishwasher soap, and their all-purpose cleaning spray. There are tons of loads included in this bundle, and these are the exact products that I use in my own home, like literally every day. So whether you're just starting your clean living journey or maybe wanting to stock up on your favorites that you already own from Truly Free, this is such an affordable way to ditch the toxins and make your home a safer space. Click the link in the show notes to grab the bestsellers bundle before the offer ends.
Hey, I'm your host, Mari Wagner, and you're listening to the Ever Be Podcast, where faith meets lifestyle. I'm so excited you're here. Whether you're a new listener or a longtime follower, I know there's something here for you. Pull up a chair and listen in for insightful, real-life conversations and actionable steps on how to claim the full life God created you for. If you're a woman desiring to live a Christ-centered life in today's modern world, then this is for you. Welcome to Ever Be.
Welcome back to Ever Be, everybody. I'm so excited to have my friend Megan on the podcast today. She wrote a really incredible book, amongst other beautiful writings that I know you've done in the Catholic world, and many of us have probably prayed with them before. So today we're going to be chatting about Megan's story and her book that she came out with, Offer It Up. I'll tell you guys, as I was reading a few of the chapters, I knew it was a powerful read. So I'm excited to just be with her today and kind of share her story and dive into all things redemptive suffering. So Megan, welcome to Ever Be. Would you please introduce yourself?
Thanks so much, Mari. It's a joy to be here. And yes, I have been in the ministry world for a bit. I've been a longtime team member of Blessed Is She, so I'm sure I've gotten to know some of you there, and writing for spiritualdirection.com. But in my real life, in my 24/7 life, I'm a wife. I'm a mom of three beautiful kids. One of them is our miracle baby after we struggled to have kids, and we have a big, fluffy white dog named Otto. We live in the Denver area. I've been in the military. I'm a veteran for a total of 15 years, or for 5 years on active duty. I met my husband at West Point and then got off active duty so I could be a mom and stay home with my kids, praise God, and continued on with the reserve thing, kind of the 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks a year for about 10 more years. So here, there, and everywhere, but just such a gift to be here and to have gone through not only this journey of, you know, all of these high points, but also a lot of different health diagnoses in there and learning the Lord's love through them.
Yeah, I'm so excited to just to hear more about your journey. So first of all, let's kick it off. What inspired you to write Offer It Up, and how did your personal journey with chronic illness that you share in the book kind of shape its message?
Yeah. So the funny thing is, because the Lord has a sense of humor, is I did not set out to write this book. I set out to write another book. I was actually under contract to write on women's dignity and identity, and I kept running up against walls in the process. And I was in the midst of recovering from a surgery when I got a message on Instagram from a woman. I had done some speaking, some workshops on redemptive suffering, some writing here and there, and devotionals on redemptive suffering. And she said, Megan, do you have any practical resources, like practical books that you can recommend for me? Because I am really struggling with this one thing. And I just, like, I don't know how to deal with it day to day. And I thought, oh yeah, let me respond. Let me get you some resources right away. And I came up totally blank. And so I thought, oh, well, you know, I know there's this beautiful encyclical by John Paul II, which is so inspiring, but it doesn't really get into the practicals or the how-tos. And by the next morning, I had the download of a chapter list from the Lord in my head. And I discerned it with my spiritual director and just started writing out of obedience, even though I was nowhere near finish with this other book. And finally, I brought it to my editor and she said, this is the book that God wants. So it came directly from the Lord. And it was the book I needed to read as I began going through all of my struggles with different diagnoses, with endometriosis, with a degenerative spine disease called ankylosing spondylitis, severe digestive issues, among other things. And it, as I came to find out, is the book that the message that we all need, because we all face suffering in our own way, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, and trying to reconcile this truth that God is good and yet we have suffering in this life. And how do we hold the tension of that? And how do we discover his presence in it? And what do we do with the big feelings that come with it? All went into this book. All of my wrestling and the way that the Lord has spoken to me through it, and the way that we can practically approach our difficulties every single day through the lens of God's love.
Yeah, I think you said it so perfectly, that tension that we have to hold there. It really is. I talked a little bit about it at Seek, but it's such a paradox to like learn to love and trust the one who is allowing our cross to happen, right? Because there is kind of that both end of just like the Lord is allowing this suffering, but it doesn't negate the fact that he is good and that there is a plan and a redemption behind this suffering. But in our humanity, it's just so, it's hard to wrap our heads around that and hard to kind of understand how there could be good through it. And that's, I just think, one of the mysteries of our faith. But this phrase, offer it up, I want to hear more about it, because when you see it on the cover, it's big and it's bold. And I think in the Catholic world, there's a lot of feelings around the phrase offer it up. It like fires some people up and they're like, yes, offer it up. That's what we're here to do in this Catholic, you know, life. And then some people are turned off by it. And some people are like, don't tell me to offer it up. Like, what, you know, what does that mean? So I just want to hear from you, like, how do you unpack and kind of reclaim the true meaning of this phrase, offer it up, in your book?
Absolutely. And it's, I like to say that the title itself is almost tongue in cheek. It's very confronting, because so many people do have experiences with mothers, grandmothers saying, offer it up. And that, especially in my experience in the military, you suck it up. Like, we're going to just push it aside. Yeah. We're going to ignore it. We're going to drive on. We're not going to acknowledge our suffering, because that means that we're being weak, that we are being needy, wants to hear about it. This isn't something we talk about. So offer it up in the sense that I understood it in my, you know, growing up in the 1980s in Catholicism, where it wasn't really talked about, it just meant we're going to brush it aside. We don't need to address this. And in reality, offering our suffering means inviting the Lord into it. So it is very confronting in the fact that it requires us to acknowledge our suffering and acknowledge it in such a way that we understand both the true difficulty of it. So we're not minimizing our suffering compared to other people's, because that's very easy to do, but we're also not giving it more power than it's due over us. We don't say, this suffering completely defines me, or I am a helpless victim of this. We acknowledge the difficulty and then we invite God into it. And in inviting God into our suffering, the Lord redeems all things. That's why he came to earth. Amen. He took on flesh. He experienced a body. The enemy does not have a body, but the Lord has a body, so that he can experience the fullness of the difficulty of our humanity and the goodness of our humanity, both, again, intention, and bring good out of every single suffering that we experience. He redeems all of it. So in acknowledging our suffering, and not just acknowledging it, but inviting the Lord into it, even though suffering itself is a mystery, we understand that the Lord brings about a far greater good than the suffering itself. So every single suffering that we offer to the Lord, he completely overturns victoriously for our good in the context of eternity, and just silences the evil of the suffering itself. So that is what redemptive suffering actually is in reality with the Lord. It's looking at this difficulty and saying, this is really rough. And also it has eternal value when I allow the Lord and offering it to the Lord, we become victorious. We become filled with purpose in our suffering. We're not just powerless anymore.
That is so true. I am just like reflecting back on just the journey of our own cross right now, struggling with infertility and just kind of all the stages that I've experienced over the years before really stepping into this season of suffering. I had never truly, truly suffered before. And so it was a very new experience. And I think for a while, kind of what you're saying of like, you have to invite the Lord to be able to offer it to him again. I feel like the word that comes to mind is like acceptance. Mm-hmm. Like you have to come to a place where you accept, like, this is part of my story. Like this is reality of what I'm experiencing right now. Mm-hmm. And once you come kind of embrace is a tough word to use here because embrace almost has like a warmth to it, you know, but once you come to embrace a part of your story, it's like then your heart is free to offer it back to the Lord. And finally, I feel like that's kind of that full circle moment where the Lord has been waiting to carry it for you and with you instead of like putting it all on you. And it takes those steps to accept your story, to then have the like humility of heart to be like, okay, Lord, like I'm going to give it back to you. Like, what do you want to do with it? And I think that's a big challenge. And I know for me, probably the first year and a half, I was in so much denial and I was like, mm-hmm. God just got the wrong girl. Like, I think God actually just like swapped the stories of two of his daughters and he didn't mean to do this. And for a while I was just like waiting for that positive pregnancy test. Cause I was like, this isn't my story. This isn't my story. And when I actually came to accept that and be like, oh, this is part of the story the Lord is writing in my life and in my marriage. And there is purpose to his plan. Like now I can accept that and offer it back to him to see like what he has in store. That's when I began to see fruit in the suffering and in my relationship with God. So I love that you kind of touched on that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And you know, it is so important to understand that it's such a human thing. We're human and we can't escape our humanity no matter how hard we try. I've tried my whole life and it doesn't work. I can't be perfect. Yeah. I can't stop feeling these feelings and they're real and they're raw. But the Lord is not overwhelmed by that. He's not afraid of that. And he says himself in the garden, Father, take this cup. He cries out, time, you know, so the Lord isn't deterred by the time it takes us. And it's like grief. It's a process. There's anger. There's denial. There is escape. There are all of these things that we go to first. And even when we get into, you know, I've gotten into this, what I call muscle memory of offering now. But even with that, there are days where maybe it's mid-morning and I think, oh, well, I've been grumpy about this all day, but I haven't offered it yet. Sorry, Lord, here we go. But He is not deterred by that. He is so patient with our humanity when we are looking toward that place of offering it and surrendering it to him. And in fact, I think those moments, and I would love to get into this later too, they have even more value. He even tells St. Faustina that these most difficult moments of turning over our will and trying to accept that this is part of our story, trying to reconcile the fact that I have to deal with this, even though I don't want to, those offerings become the most valuable and the most filled with life and for other people as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I love St. Faustina. Cannot wait to get into that. You mentioned in the book that our suffering can, you know, benefit not just us, mm-hmm. but others as well. So how does that work spiritually?
Yeah. So when the Lord became incarnate, when Jesus, the Word, took on flesh, everything he experienced, if you think about it, coming from heaven into this tiny little human body, from the expanse of paradise into this little human body, everything for him was a suffering from that moment on compared to heaven. And so in taking on flesh and taking on the human condition and entering into the entire human condition, not just coming as, you know, a man, as my sons would say, you know, in Minecraft, not just spawning randomly, you know, in the middle of his 30s, but becoming a a zygote in the womb, our Lord has sanctified every single moment of our human existence so that everything that we experience in our soul, in our mind, in our body, in our flesh can be redeemed. So his divinity in becoming united with humanity means that our humanity, he can elevate that to the divine. So everything in this fallen world that the enemy intends for our ill through Christ's incarnation, through his all redemptive act on the cross of his passion, death, and ultimate resurrection, all of the things that we experience from the enemy can be overturned through the power of Christ's incarnation, his resurrection, and his passion and death for victory, for life. So Christ took every single suffering up to and including the ultimate suffering of death and overturned it for life. And he did not do that by taking it away, which is the hard part for us as humans. He doesn't walk us out of the dark valley. He doesn't take away suffering. He didn't take away death. He transformed the effects of it. And that's the difference, is that we still experience suffering, but suffering itself does not have to be a death anymore. It can bring life, and it happens through Christ. But we have free will, right? So Christ invites us to be his co-workers. He invites us into all of his work. He doesn't have to. He doesn't need us at all, but he wants us. The Lord wants us. And so everything that he invites us into, we have the choice to say, yes, I want to cooperate with that or not. So whenever we invite Christ into our suffering, whenever we offer it to him, uniting it, him coming to us, us going to him, it becomes redeemed. And that's how it works. It becomes filled with God's life, God's victory, when, on the other hand, absent of him, without him, when we don't do that, it just remains empty. It remains devoid of life. It just remains, in this fallen world, the evil that it truly is. So when we invite God into our suffering, when we say, Lord, I give this to you, I offer it to you, I surrender it to you, all of it not only becomes filled with God's life, but we understand that when we pray for others, it's intercessory prayer, right? We're asking for good things for other people. So we can pray with our words, but we can also pray with our actions. And act of offering our suffering, it becomes intercessory prayer. So it's not just helping us to come out of ourselves and to recognize God's presence in suffering, but it's truly bringing God's love into our suffering so that he can be able to expand it and fill it with life and let it overflow as everything that we offer to him naturally does for the good of other people. It becomes his divine work in the kingdom for others. Right. I can say, Lord, I invite you into this. I offer it to you. I give it to you. And I can also attach an intention to that. I can say for Mari and her desire to have a family, I can offer it for someone I know who's really struggling with an illness right now and maybe even at the point of death. I can offer it for my kids and their vocations. I can offer it for all sorts of things for a situation. You know, my husband was traveling this past weekend and there were some tornadoes. And so I'm saying, Lord, I'm scared and I'm offering my fear for his safe return, you know. And it doesn't mean that we are trying to force God's hand in any way, but we're inviting graces that cannot be unlocked in any other way because they require our cooperation with the Lord because he gives us free will.
Yeah. Wow. That's super powerful. And I feel like it's almost us entering into that is almost like you were saying, like mimicking what Jesus did for us. It's like emulating his act of transforming suffering into life and using our suffering, offering it to the Lord so he can transform it into life and attaching those intentions to our suffering. And I was sharing this with Megan before we hit record, but as I was reading some of the book, I was realizing like, oh my gosh, like I haven't intentionally done this in my journey. And that took me by surprise as, you know, someone who strives to be a faithful Catholic who's heard this message before. I think it's so in our humanity, it's so easy to get swept up in our own suffering and really, really focus inward, which I think there's a lot of understanding and grace that we can hold for that space. But also I felt encouraged by this message just to realize, like, look, like I can use my suffering for the goodness of others as well, and allow the Lord to use it not just to redeem my life, my story, my soul, but also others, which I think is so powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. And I would love to bring St. Faustina in here because it was one of the turning points for me. So just kind of as a more detailed background, I was diagnosed with endometriosis pretty early on. Shortly after my husband and I got married, I had started dealing with the pain at age 14. And so going through all of my military training and everything, it was kind of getting in the way. And I was like, what do I do with this? You know, we were very, very blessed with two children right after we got married. Although it was really tough when I was working full time in the Army. There's a lot of isolation in that. But then we had two pregnancy losses. And one was a really tragic ectopic pregnancy for which I had to have emergency surgery. And so when I kind of got to that place of, oh, wow, this isn't just pain. Like, this is affecting the deep desires of my heart. I wanted that huge Catholic family. And, you know, it was just heartbreaking. And I was to the point where I was even feeling numb. Like, I just this half-hearted prayer to our family patron, St. Jude, who had prayed my husband into the church when we were in college. And I said, it'd be really nice to raise even one more baby. And I later found out that I was expecting sooner than I anticipated after that surgery. And our son was then both due and born on St. Jude's feast day. And so it was kind of this, like, all of a sudden realization that, oh, wow, maybe God's not just distant in my suffering. Maybe actually right here in the midst of it, in the details, in ways that I can't even fathom. And there have been so many times that I have prayed and asked St. Jude for things, for physical healing since then, that haven't happened, you know. And there have been so many prayers that I've prayed for other people that have been answered in ways I've expected, and ways that, you know, I was hoping it wouldn't be answered. And so being able to understand through that miracle for us that the Lord is listening and he's in the details. And when the answer doesn't turn out the way we desire, he's still in the details and he's working it together for good, even that if that good is only visible in the context of eternity, it really opened my heart to be able to be more honest with the Lord. And I think that's the place where we have to start, is just that honesty, that raw honesty of, Lord, this is really rough. And I don't want to do this. Praying that garden prayer, like, Lord, take this away. But taking it to the Lord instead of just being in our own heads and being in isolation in it allows him to come in with his truth, with his help, with his strength. And so Jesus says to St. Faustina, and this was a real turning point for me after I began to understand the Lord's presence and kind of, like you, really be able to digest the message of redemptive suffering. Jesus said to St. Faustina, you will save more souls through your prayers and sufferings than will a missionary in all his teachings and sermons. Which is just wild, because you do, Mari, and the speaking that I do, it's like, I mean, that feels really, you know, big and intense a lot of times, like speaking to a really angle, focusing on the message. And yes, when we the fact that we can make an impact on a soul in a far more powerful way simply by lying in bed and lifting our pain to the Lord, that is wild. I mean, it shows the value of our suffering and why the enemy doesn't want us to turn outward, why he wants us to remain inward. But to me, the most encouraging thing that Jesus says to St. Faustina, he goes on to say, do not be afraid if you experience repugnance and dislike for suffering. Repugnance, really strong word. It's a really strong dislike. And
I have definitely felt that.
He says, don't be afraid if you experience repugnance and dislike for suffering, because all its power rests in the will. And so these contrary feelings, far from lowering the degree of the sacrifice in my eyes, will enhance it. Which is, I mean, talk about our humanity and the tension and the wrestling and the difficulty of offering our suffering. It's powerful when it's harder.
It really is. Gosh, that is so good. I need to go back and open up her diary. I always say I've been reading St. Faustina's Diary. It is such a thick book. So it has taken like years to get through. I'm not even done with it. And
same.
Every now and then I pick it up and you just have to digest like piece by piece. But there's these gold nuggets like that in there that I just feel like totally like change your approach to your relationship with God. It's almost just like a whole new like facet of like formation, like spiritually, that we get just from like these little nuggets. And that was super powerful to hear. She has so many other quotes in there too about suffering. Some of them that I love that have carried me through this journey as well is that Jesus tells her not to be afraid of suffering, because when we are suffering is when he is the closest to us.
Yeah.
And that was beautiful to hear, because I think for anyone who's, you know, in a journey of deep suffering, it's so easy to just fall into a place where we feel like the Lord isn't there, or where you feel like he is the most distant he's ever been. Mm-hmm. And I think it's easy for us to fall into that because it's almost like we, you know, our perception of the Father sometimes is like, he's a good dad who wants to fulfill every desire, which is true. But then when some desires aren't fulfilled in the way that we thought, we kind of, that the image gets distorted as like, well, maybe he doesn't hear me. Maybe he doesn't want to give me my heart's desires. You know, maybe he's not with me. And Jesus really kind of hones in that message in St. Faustina's Diary, where he's like, suffering doesn't mean the Lord is far. It actually means like, I am the closest with you, and I am like bearing this suffering with you. And one thing too that comes to mind that I just want to share, I shared this in my Lent devotional this past year, which was about suffering. It was called Through the Thorns. And before I experienced the suffering of infertility, the Lord began to prepare me even years in advance with almost like a prophetic moment in adoration once, where he kind of like foretold that there was a cross coming in my life. Mm-hmm. And what he said to me was, I myself will be crucified in you, but fear not, for there will be a resurrection. And at the time, I had no idea what that meant. And I spent like maybe like 2 years trying to figure out like, what is this big cross? And I hadn't experienced it yet. But through the first few years of our infertility journey, that began to come back to mind. And I began to realize, the Lord is not asking me to die on this cross alone. Like, he's not asking me to be crucified. He's asking for me to invite him and to allow himself to be crucified in my life. And that just shows like the closeness we have in deep suffering to the Lord, that we might not otherwise have that opportunity. So that I think is such a powerful message to share, and highly encourage anybody to read St. Faustina.
Our friends at Walking with Purpose have developed something brand new for young women called Heart of Vines. Heart of Vines is a book for those who are searching for a different path. If you've been trying to live life meaningfully and responsibly, but your heart remains unsettled and anxious, then this book is for you. As young women, we are told about all the different things that are supposed to make us happy, but many fail to deliver on their promises. Heart of Vines is all about taking a different road, one that leads to a life of flourishing, rest, and purpose. Everbee listeners can save 20% on Heart of Vines' book with the code EVERBE20. Visit walkingwithpurpose.com and enter code EVERBE20 at checkout.
I really believe that our church needs faithful and well-formed leaders. So our sponsor, the Augustine Institute, offers master's degree in theology, pastoral theology, and Catholic education that I want to point you to. They are rooted in scripture and tradition, offered online, so it's easy to get this degree.
or on campus if you want to be in person, or in a hybrid format if that's what works best for you. Here, you'll be equipped to teach, lead, and evangelize clearly and confidently. Augustine Institute graduates are leading today's church in parishes, dioceses, schools, and apostolates, and you could be next. So learn more and apply at augustine.edu.
So thank you for sharing that. But one thing I wanted to note too is, as you share your story and all these beautiful truths, you speak with such confidence and peace. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really challenging. Mm-hmm. How do you find purpose and peace in the midst of your own suffering and your story? And do you have any practical tools that you can share with people that might be in a similar journey?
Yeah. Well, I would love to get into the practical stuff. But first, I have to say, how do you find that peace? Just a lot of wrestling, a lot of being real. I mean, just complete honesty with the Lord. And I think that is such a gift of the spiritual life and the journey into relationship with the Lord, is that the closer you get to him, the more you discover that you have to be daughter, just as you were saying. And you have to be a child. You have to be able to be that toddler who throws the temper tantrum with the Lord and says, I don't want to do this. Why are you allowing this? But we have to take it to him. We have to wrestle over it with him, because if we're just doing it in our own heads, nature abhors a vacuum. And so, of course, if there's a vacuum of God, who's going to swoop in and try to influence and give us an interpretation? The enemy will. And we know that he does not want us to know the power of our suffering. He does not want us to know God's presence in our suffering. He does not want us to know that God has a very, very good plan, even greater than we can imagine, for all of this difficulty that we're going through. And so, it really comes down to, in every difficult moment, taking it to the Lord, because he can take it. He is a good father. He can take every single tantrum. And he's so patient. He's going to wait on us. He's going to wait with us. He's going to hold us. My middle, when he was very young, we would have to sometimes do, during a meltdown, the kind of the bear hug.
Yeah.
So he could regulate. I mean, that's just how we are with the Lord. That's who we are as daughters and children. And so, yeah, the peace comes not by trying to avoid those big feelings, but by really taking those big feelings to the Lord, because we're going to have them. And so often we want to skip over the lesson. Mm-hmm. For the consolation, right? We don't want to go through the dark valley with the Lord, but he's in it. That's where he is. He's in the valley. He's in the valley with us. He's in the pit. And he knows we have to go through that in order to be able to move forward. So when we're in that place, what can we do practically is the million-dollar question. I'm one of those who's like, okay, that's a really good truth word. That's a really good answer. Right? Yeah. But tell me how. Like, you got to tell me how, because I can't.
Yeah.
I can't do this. I would love to share kind of three things that I was able to go into a lot greater depth in the book. Just kind of three takeaways that can help you get started. And those are offering ahead of time. The second is what I lovingly call my redemptive routine. And the third is offering in the moment. So offering ahead of time, God is outside time. He is always prepared to receive our prayer, whether it's before, during, or after. And so offering ahead of time, one of the most simple ways to do that is a basic morning offering. And there are wonderful morning offerings that you can look up, that you can memorize on the USCCB, on Hallow, you know, you name it, the internet has it. But a basic morning offering based on a French priest who wrote it in 1865 for his missionaries, says something to the effect of, oh, my Jesus, through the Immaculate Heart of Mary, I offer you my prayers, my works, my joys, and my sufferings of this day. So it covers all the bases, like you're covered. And so going into your day, if you're just simply saying that prayer, or even more simply, nothing that you memorize, but just, Lord, I offer everything this day to you. Please help. Yeah. Is sufficient. to give God permission, because remember, we have free will, to give God your consent to let him take everything in your day and use it for good, for your good and for the good of others. And so when we get into, you know, traffic and we're really annoyed and frustrated and being human about it and not being perfect, you know, the Lord can use that. And he can make good of it in the light of eternity. When we are dealing with something that's maybe so painful that we can't even string two cohesive thoughts together later, we offered ahead of time. And so the Lord remembers that even when we forget, even when we can't think of it. And he will honor that offering and say, I will use this for your good, my daughter, and for the good of others. So offering ahead of time, super simple, easy way to just...
I love that.
Yeah. Take whatever is going to happen and let the sufferings have merit in eternity to store up treasures in heaven, to let greater, to let the work be filled with life instead of just kind of a checkbox on your to-do list that fades into the passage of time. So offering ahead of time is the first thing. The second thing, redemptive routine. I kind of came across this concept, I feel like is like this amazing light that the Lord gave me when I was on an apostolate called the Seven Sisters, a Seven Sisters team offering, which offers a holy hour each day of the week for specific priests. So I was offering a holy hour every Tuesday for my pastor. And I started to ramp up with my health. I, about 4 years ago, was diagnosed with a degenerative spine disease. So I have trouble walking when I get up. Some people end up in a wheelchair eventually with it, and it's not going to get better. It's only going to get worse. So, you know, it got harder to get out of the house. I was running late a lot of times, just normally, not just because of my chronic illness, to this holy hour. And so I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to offer on the drive, on the way there, you know, for my pastor. And so it got to the point where I realized I can offer everything in my day for him. Okay. That's wonderful. And then it naturally translated to other days of the week. So I was getting this wonderful email on Wednesdays about praying and fasting for our spouses, for our husbands. And so I thought, oh, Wednesday, I can offer everything on Wednesday for my husband. And it just grew. Thursday, a lot of ministry work and mentorship for women. And so I began to offer for my ministry and community Fridays for my bishop, my spiritual director, for a cloistered sister friend I have. Saturdays, my kids all play hockey. So I was, you know, really not loving having to get up and drive them. And I don't run warm. So hockey rinks are the most comfortable place.
Cold.
Yeah. So just being able to offer those things that I really didn't want to do. For their future, for their sanctity. Sundays, I began offering for priests. Mondays are, you know, the hardest day of the week for most people, including me. And so I began offering for all of those who might be the most hardened sinners, or those in need of conversion, those close to death, for their souls, for their salvation. And then we're at Tuesday again. And so I realized I can do this every day of the week, every day, and also do it with specific tasks. You know, if there's a task that you really don't want to do, I've never been great at meal planning and making meals. So I'm offering that for my family. But the beautiful thing about for me for regarding the days of the week is that oftentimes when I'm waking up in the middle of the night I have a lot of digestive issues, and waking up in the middle of the night in pain and dealing with chronic illness, insomnia again for hours in the middle of the night, I went through that, you know, natural human reaction that we talked about earlier, where I start to bargain with the Lord. I beg him to take it away. I tell him all the things I'll do if he makes it stop and lets me sleep. You know, I get angry. You know, tell him if you're allowing this, why did you give me this vocation? Because now I have to get up and be able to care of my kids and
square my family.
Allowing this, and I have this vocation, why don't you just make me a nun so I could suffer in peace and, you know, myself. All of this, as I go through that trajectory of natural human feelings, eventually it always occurs to me, oh yeah, what day is it? I don't want to be but what day is it again? What do I have coming up on the calendar? Oh, it's Tuesday. for my pastor. That's right. And kind of having that rhythm, that routine that happens over and over again, just allows me to kind of key into, this is for something bigger than myself. This is for something more eternal than this moment. And so it really brings me, again, out of myself and into that place of, oh, I can think of things beyond myself. I can have purpose beyond this moment. And it's me to get through the moment at the same time that it's helping other people. So
yeah,
redemptive routine.
I love that. I love the simplicity of just like every day having a little like purpose or attachment to it. Yeah. It, I feel like, is a small enough thing that we can like pick up routinely. Mm-hmm. So very helpful.
Yes.
And did you have a
Yes. And, you know, we all have our different intentions and things that we
can
very easily tailor to our life and our needs and the people in them. So the third thing is just as we kind of develop those habits of offering, it helps us to get to the place where we can offer more reflexively in the moment. And so offering in the moment is just, you know, last week I was sick and I wasn't happy about it, but then I realized, and even the week before I was sick too, I realized, oh, I can be offering this for the conclave and for the Holy Father. And seeing that our new Holy Father was elected, I had something of real value to give. And I was almost glad. Mm-hmm. Wasn't glad, but I was like almost thankful that I had a little something more than normal
feeling. Yeah.
Because it was such a big deal and it's so important. And I have learned through the Lord's words and through St. Faustina and through, you know, this life of redemptive suffering, how valuable those offerings actually are. So to be able to give something for the good of the church was like, it was very gratifying in the moment, you know?
Yeah, that is amazing. One other question that I want to make sure that we get to, because we touched on it a little bit at the beginning about how the message of offer it up can sometimes be received as like, minimize your suffering, but you know, we've spoken to the fact that that's not at the heart of what it truly is. How do we offer our suffering to God without minimizing like just the real emotional or physical pain that we may be experiencing? And this is kind of a twofold question, because you also touched on it before about how sometimes as women, like we compare our suffering to others and sometimes use that to minimize our own as well. Mm-hmm. How would you respond to this?
Yeah, I was so blessed to be able to write a whole chapter on comparison and suffering, because I feel like for me especially, and for so many women, most women, I would venture to say, it's at the heart of the difficulty of life in general, as well as that comparison makes its way into everything. And so to be able to understand that suffering doesn't have to rule us, but also we should acknowledge it, independent of what's going on in other people's lives, it's very freeing and very important. So in this kind of truth of the fact that we have suffering and we acknowledge our suffering, but someone always has it worse than us and someone else always has it better than us, it can really be a temptation to vanity, which is at its root caring what other people think, right? Giving more credence to what other people think than what God thinks. And so vanity is worrying about their opinion, and or pride, which is worrying about, you know, am I doing it right? You know, am I doing this in the way it should be? And turning that focus again in on myself. And so the parable of the talents is a really beautiful tool, I think, for us in suffering, where we, if you read the parable of the talents, one person gets 10, you know, or even conducted 10, another person gets. So no matter the amount of suffering we get, we have the opportunity to offer it, to invest it by giving it to the Lord so that he can bring double out of it. He can bring so much more value out of it. Or the choice to kind of bury it in the ground. And that's where we begin to feel the isolation and the despair. And when we are kind of looking at, you know, when I was dealing with my miscarriages, I didn't fully grieve them for a long time because I was looking at other women who had stillbirths and much later term losses. And I thought, well, my suffering is nothing compared to theirs, so I shouldn't feel this way. So when we care, we are tempted to pass judgment on not only our suffering itself, but how we respond to it. And when we do that, it robs us, it robs others of the value of that suffering. Allow the Lord into it to redeem it as fully as it could be redeemed. And so when we compare in the sense of minimizing, we don't allow the Lord to bring as much redemption out of it. And in the process, we don't heal from it in the way that we could with his presence.
Yeah.
So when we're dealing with suffering, even when someone else has it worse, it's very important to say, again, with that kind of matter of fact, this is reality. I'm dealing with this and it's hard. And I have these human emotions and these human even traumas a lot of times associated with it, these very real fears. And I don't need to shame myself for it. The enemy wants to shame me, but I'm not going to shame myself. The Lord's not shaming me for it. Jesus himself never minimized his suffering or anyone else's. And so I can acknowledge it and again, bring God into it, because the other end of that spectrum in feeling victimized and feeling isolated is I'm alone in this. No one else understands. No one else is dealing with this in the way that I am. And that woe is me, that victimization mentality brings us into despair and hopelessness and powerlessness. And so when we're minimizing it, it robs our suffering of the value. When we are feeling victimized by it, it robs our suffering of the value. It's the same effect on both ends of the spectrum. And so, you know, for example, I can eat about 10 foods total, and it's been that way for many years now. And I've had to spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to receive the Eucharist, and for many months now have been having to fast from receiving the Eucharist. I can't receive low gluten host or even the wine used for consecration because it makes my throat start to close up. And so I've really wrestled with this and I battle with it. I'm like, Lord, why would you do this? Why would you withhold yourself? I mean, I understand that there's a way to go with this or that or the other, but you know, in my human reasoning, it seems like nothing is worse. Like nothing else could be comparative to this. And yet, even in that, as you described, letting Christ be, what a beautiful image, letting Christ be crucified in you. Teresa, she explains that in our suffering, we have come close enough to the cross of Christ for him to kiss us. The Lord
told
me that in this particular suffering of having to fast from his physical presence himself, he's inviting me to be on the cross with him and offer it for the sake of others, in a way that is more powerful than if I were at the foot of the cross receiving from him by joining him in that offering. And so when we allow that victimization, the hopelessness prevails. And it's not that we don't have those feelings, but again, that we bring those feelings to the Lord. Or in minimization, that we say, okay, well, I'm trying to push this aside. I'm looking at everyone else. Lord, what do you have to say about this suffering? What do you want? So in between the two extremes is not only where the virtue is, but it's where the Lord is. It's where his love is. It's where his sustenance is. And it's what sustains us when everything else is really trying to, I mean, so many people, you know, they want to fix our suffering or minimize it too. And so we have all of these messages that I've had people tell me before, like, well, at least you're not on a feeding tube and, you know, it's supposed to make you feel better, but oh, the guilt that comes with that. or you should always adopt. And, you know, I'm sure you hear that all the time. And that was a very particular bring, right? It's a very particular thing. It's not something
yes.
has called us to, despite our ability to have more children. And so these are things that we hear from the world, but in that mean between the two extremes, when we're feeling isolated or feeling tempted to compare to other people and what should I be doing, or, you know, why is this happening to me, that we can take it to the Lord and hold it out to him and say, this is what I'm wrestling with. This is what this person said. What do you think about it? What do you think about it? What is your answer, Lord? And that brings us into his reality and his grace and his strength and his fortitude to continue on in the path of his redemption, so that we're not taking up extraneous crosses that we don't need to take up, and that we have the grace to, as you said at the beginning, to begin to learn to embrace the cross that he has actually given us.
Yeah. Yeah. As you were talking, I was kind of, we've talked about this theme throughout, just like this idea of being a child with the Lord and having the freedom to be a child with him. And I was just receiving these images from, you know, when I was a kid, and comparing the way our family did things compared to how our friends did things. You know, we're like, oh, well, my friend gets to do this and their parents let them do this and they got to do this. My mom would always say, like, worry about your own family. You know, like, this is how we do things in our family. This is, you know, worry about how we do things here. We don't look at other people's families, other people's homes and compare. And I feel like in a similar way, you know, we might have those conversations with the Lord about, like, well, so-and-so got this suffering, or so-and-so didn't get this, or, you know, whatever. The Lord might just be like, I'm worrying about you. You know, I'll worry about my children. You worry about your, you know, what I have given you. And just this idea of, like, living in our present moment. The Lord does not live, like, in the past or in the future. And he wants us to focus on how he's working in our lives in this present moment. So that's just such a good reminder.
Yeah.
And I think, go ahead.
And the Lord, even in the Gospels, right when he's walking with Peter, right after he says, Peter, upon this rock I will build my church. Peter turns around and he looks at John and he says, what about him? And Jesus says, you know what? You follow me. You follow me. If you're not, yep. Just looking at Jesus.
Yes, yes. I think a good question to end on here is, what would you say to the woman listening who feels abandoned by God in her suffering? Because I know this is an easy place to get to in the midst of darkness and deep suffering. What would you say to her to encourage her in her journey?
Yeah, I would say, first and foremost, go there with the Lord. You've got to go there. You've got to tell him that you're feeling abandoned, that you feel like he's not there. Because again, he can take those things. So be the daughter who's willing to say that to him. When I was diagnosed with my degenerative spine disease, one of the most, I spent a few days in kind of numbness, that denial that you described so authentically earlier, Mari.
And yeah.
Just thinking, as long as I don't end up in a wheelchair, okay. And that was the condition that I set in my head. And so a lot of times we don't realize that we've kind of set these conditions, or said, in terms of kind of bargaining with God, our fears, as long as it's not X, Y, or Z in terms of a worst case scenario, I'll be okay. And then when we come up against these things, or the possibility of these things, we feel like the Lord has not kept up his end of the deal. Because we are thinking about it being able to kind of play out in a certain way. And so we really have to bring those things to the Lord and even ask him, what is underneath this, Lord? What is underneath my belief that you've abandoned? What is underneath my feeling of complete isolation?
Yeah.
And when the Lord, in his goodness, reveals that, because he does. He does when we're honest with him. We can then bring that to him and hold it out to him and say, okay, well, I'm afraid that I'm going to end up in a wheelchair. And when I kind of spent a whole night locked in my room, ugly crying, you know, dealing with this, when I finally got to the point of bringing it to the Lord. And I realized, when I was going through all of these fears with him, that it wasn't just a fear of not being able to drive my kids to school, or being able to travel in the way I used to, or having to have you know, a house with accommodations and all of these other things. At the root of it, I was afraid that I was going to lose myself and who I was.
Yeah.
And in yeah. that, the Lord was able to respond, you can never lose who you are. You are mine. You're my daughter. And so when we go there with the Lord, he brings the light of truth into it. And he speaks to fears that we don't even realize that we've been, or vows that we don't even realize that we've made internally. And mm-hmm. it really is a process, that wading through the darkness of moving toward the light and toward freedom. So I could share a lot of platitudes. You're not alone. It's not just you.
Right.
All of these are true. But until you experience it and until you go through it with the Lord, you're not going to believe it. But when
totally
you have that experience, nothing will change forever.
Totally. Yeah. That was truth right there. I mean, I've experienced that in my own life too. And like you said, you know, we could say all the right things mm-hmm. of like, you are not alone, alone. The Lord never abandons you. He's always with you. He's closest to you in your suffering, which we have said throughout this whole episode today. But I, you know too well being in a dark place and kind of hearing those things and just like not receiving them well, or not letting them really land, or, you know, something in our heart is just not ready to actually believe those things. And not until, like you said, you wrestle with the Lord and he can handle it. I think for a long time, it was just like, you know, is this like not faithful of me to go to him and show like that I doubted him, right? Or that I don't believe in his faithfulness or his goodness or all these things. And I feel like that is just, it's a refinement of our soul, and the Lord can handle it. And he wants us to show up to him so honestly and just like raw, exactly how we are. Cause that's when he can actually work in our hearts, when he's like, finally, you're being honest with me. You know, I can actually work in your heart now and show you what the truth is, I think is really important.
And I would love to just add, cause I'm, as you're saying this, I'm thinking, oh, this is another objection I would have personally. And, you know, going through that, and that I have had, I want to tell anyone who's dealing with this, you can handle it too. When you take it, mm-hmm. you can handle it, because he's going to give you the grace to deal with it. So he can handle it, but also you can. A lot of times we think that we can't go there because we're going to
be too weak,
be able to move on from it. And it's the opposite that's actually true. When you go there with the Lord, he gives you new strength and new fortitude and supernatural ability that we can't achieve only on our own human power.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Thank you, Megan, for coming on today and just sharing your story so vulnerably and honestly, and just speaking words of encouragement to us listeners today.
Thank you so much, Mari, for having me, and praying for you and all of the listeners.
Where can we find more about you, and where can we find your book Offered Up?
Yes. So I am at meganhelmstead.com, and I'll let Mari spell that because I've got a fun J in my name that's silent. So meganhelmstead.com. And then the book Offered Up, Discovering the Power and Purpose of Redemptive Suffering, it's best to get it at the St. Paul Center, stpaulcenter.com. That's stpaulcenter.com. Amazon is not a great place. It's been in and out of stock for whatever reason. So yeah, just go to the St. Paul Center and you'll be good.
Perfect. We'll make sure to link it in the show notes.
Okay.
Thank you, Megan.
God bless you.
If you've been wanting to swap out your makeup or skincare for non-toxic options that actually work, but you've been a little hesitant because of the price, now's a good time to get some of those spring savings for Crunchy. Now through May 26th, they're offering free shipping on all orders over $50. And you know that nothing is more annoying than paying for shipping. So now that that's out of the way, it's your moment to try the top clean beauty brand out there. I personally love Crunchy because everything is made with safe and high performing ingredients, which is hard to find in the clean beauty world. The products feel so luxurious. Their makeup does not melt off my face. It stays on all day, and their skincare actually brings results. I've seen it with my own eyes. So if you've been curious to try, or you're just ready to restock your favorites, head over to crunchy.com/Mari Wagner, or just click the link in the show notes and take advantage of the free shipping offer while it lasts. Thank you so much for listening in. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and on social media, and give me a 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform you're listening on.
That helps me and the show out so much. Also, make sure to follow the podcast on Instagram at everbepodcast. And if you want more content like this and you don't already follow me, you can also follow me on Instagram at mari.c.wagner. And may his praise ever be on our lips. God bless.